to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on the changes to best practice in early stage and locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer, including the evolving role of EGFR TKI therapy in the adjuvant setting, the relevance of biomarker testing, and how and when to engage patients in treatment decisions about their care. Financial support for this medical education activity has been provided to TouchIME by an educational grant from AstraZeneca. In this podcast, a medical oncologist, pulmonologist, and a thoracic surgeon discuss the case of James, a never smoker with adenocarcinoma, to highlight the key considerations for treatment selection, including suitability for surgical resection and the use of neoadjuvant and adjuvant therapies.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. David Planchard. I'm thoracic oncologist at Gustave Roussy Villejuif, France. It's a great pleasure today to have a discussion with two major experts. First is Professor Johan Bonteskist. He's head of respiratory oncology at the Leuven University Hospital in Leuven, Belgium. And second expert, a surgeon, Professor Masahiro Tsuboi, director of thoracic surgery, National Cancer Center Hospital East in Kashiwa, Japan. Today, we will have discussion about the case of James, a patient with locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer. We'll be focusing on key considerations for treatment selection, including suitability of surgical intervention and the impact of adjuvant therapies on our management approach. So let's go to the case of James. So it's a male, 65 years old, never smoker patient, and he presents some persistent cough and some episode of hemoptysis, minor dyspnea, some loss of appetite, and no specific history of cardiocomorbidity. So it was performed a chest X-ray, thoracic CT scan, and a PET CT scan. The different exams showed a 45 millimeter diameter tumor in the right upper lobe. It was associated also to a 10 millimeter right iliac lymph node stationed 10R and also a mediastinal lymph node station 4R 15 millimeter. No brain metastasis on the brain MRI. It was done a bronchoscopy and also an ebus to get biopsy on station lymph node 4R and 10R, which confirmed an adenocarcinoma, TTF1 positive, CK7 positive. Pulmonary function was done with FEV, TLCO, which were supposed to be normal, more than 40%, but we can have discussion about the result and indication to go to surgery. Good performance status, PS1. So finally, it was a stage 3A, monocyte lymph node mediastinal, T2B, N2, M0. It was also performed on the same time on the tissue biopsy, PD-L1 expression by immunohistochemistry, which was positive, more than 65%, and also an NGS panel, and it was shown an EGFR mutation, deletion 19, associated with a TP53 mutation, TMB was low, and no other specific molecular alteration. So at that point, we have to discuss the file on MDT with all the different specialties, particularly with ophthalmologist, radio-oncologist, and also with a surgeon. And I would probably start with the first discussion, probably for Tsuboi. If you see this patient, if you have this discussion, would you consider to go upfront for surgery for this patient, never smoker, Tsuboi?
In my opinion, so his pulmonary function is a little bit low. So, of course, he has a very persistent cough. So it is difficult to do that pulmonary function test. So when at that time we try to the exercise the examination such as a 6 minute walk or a two fry test. So if he is a patient will be tolerated for such a exercise examination, so I will consider to the do that the surgery in this case. As for the oncological view, so as you know, the treatment of the N23A disease is always debatable, so controversial. I mean, the multi-team discussion will be necessary, whether the disease is resectable or unresectable. In my hospital, if the mediastinal lymph node metastasis is a single or multiple and discrete type, we consider the disease as resectable and consider the treatment strategy based on the surgery. I mean the neoadjuvant treatment followed by the surgery. So at the time, neoadjuvant treatment is a CRT, chemoradiotherapy is a prior compared to the chemotherapy. This is my opinion.
Okay. And would you, and probably for Johanna, this patient, finally, we had molecular testing, which is quite fine because I don't think we perform systematically molecular testing. So probably first question, do you perform and do you think we have to perform nowadays systematically before the surgery, the molecular testing? And does this molecular testing and the fact the patient is EGFR mutated might change you the fact to expose patient or not to a neoadjuvant treatment?
Not really. Actually, the decision on whether the patient is a candidate for surgery does not at all depend on molecular testing. It's the perioperative treatments, the neoadjuvant or the adjuvant ones, and the choice of that type of treatment that is influenced by this analysis. So in this patient, as Dr. Tsuboi said, this is borderline pulmonary function testing. So we clearly need more details there before we can say that is a surgical candidate, because in this patient, radical chemoradiotherapy followed by immunotherapy would be an option as well if he's functionally non-resectable. But this need clearly further study in these patients. More than 40% is not enough in terms of information. And then in our setting, I think we would prefer to go for the neo. We consider him, if the pulmonary function test is sufficient, we consider him resectable. But we would prefer to go for a neoadjuvant treatment first, and that's a chemotherapy in the standard clinical practice. And nowadays, there are very interesting clinical trials ongoing with chemoimmunotherapy versus chemotherapy as induction treatment in surgical candidates.
And for this patient particularly, the fact to know the patient is EGFR, would you go for neoadjuvant treatment with a targeted therapy with osimertinib or erlotinib or something like this?
No, because we don't have data there. We have the early analysis of the ADORA, which is an adjuvant trial. In the neoadjuvant setting, we really don't have sufficient data. So we would go for standard chemotherapy induction, because chemotherapy is an essential part of the therapy if you have a stage 3. And we would perhaps consider a more interesting way is a protocol where the patient could get either chemotherapy or chemoimmunotherapy. If we would think about a TKI, because there is an EGFR mutation, it would be in the setting where there is evidence and it will be postoperative.
Okay, I'm completely agree. And particularly, we have also the result of the emerging trial. It's a neoadjuvant trial from the Chinese with erlotinib versus chemotherapy, 42 days of treatment with erlotinib that do not demonstrate an improvement in overall survival. So for sure, currently, there is no indication. I'm completely agree. And probably after we have this discussion, neoadjuvant, adjuvant, probably I would go for surgery and adjuvant treatment from my part, but after I completely agree, we can have discussion about the neoadjuvant part and chemotherapy, whatever. That's mean the message, this patient, whatever, even if he's EGFR mutated, he should still receive chemotherapy, neoadjuvant or adjuvant, and after for sure, we have the treatment with osimertinib in adjuvant setting.
Yeah, sure, with ADORA, we have interesting, really interesting new data, but we should not forget that the chemotherapy brings about 10 to 15% extra cure in this setting. So the ADORA should not lead to the fact that we omit the chemotherapy.
Completely agree. Yeah. And so finally, if we are coming back to the case, so finally, this patient do not get a neoadjuvant treatment. So he had been resected, complete resection. The margin were R0. So he get a right upper lobectomy, lymph node dissection. Final staging was PT2B, 46 millimeter, N2 monocyte, 4R. So it confirmed the 3A stage. So what have been discussed, and so the patient received finally adjuvant treatment with 4 cycles of platinum-based chemotherapy, cisplatin and pemetrexed, and after it was exposed to osimertinib, due to the result of the ADORA trial. So that means, Johan, currently you agree for this patient you would expose with an angiographic eye with osimertinib after platinum-based chemotherapy? Huh?
Yes. So in terms of choices of adjuvant therapy, if the chemotherapy is given either preoperatively or postoperatively, we would certainly then look at the molecular data. And so for us, if there is an EGFR mutation, even if the PD-L1 is 65%, we would, for instance, not include him or not give maybe in the near future adjuvant immunotherapy, because EGFR mutated patients are not the good candidates for immunotherapy. But based on the ADORA data, we would discuss with the patient that there is a major benefit in disease-free survival and also in brain metastasis-free survival. And we would discuss it because we don't have overall survival data, but most patients will probably go for that choice.
For sure. And Suboy, you have a high incidence of EGFR mutation in Japan. So that means currently you test all the patients who are operated for the EGFR mutation?
Unfortunately, in Japan, so EGFR testing for the stage 2 and 3A disease is not reimbursed. So it is difficult to do that. Actually, the academic research, academic approach for the EGFR testing in several hospitals. So anyway, if the osimertinib adjuvant will be approved in our country, maybe such a test will be approved by the reimbursement. And in my opinion, so based on the result of the DORA, I will recommend the adjuvant osimertinib in these patients. Based on the result of the IMPOWER-010, so you may be able to expect a reasonably effective of the atezolizumab adjuvant in the patient with the EGFR mutant. However, given the hazard ratio is a little bit higher than compared with that of the ADORA. So I think osimertinib TKI adjuvant will be prior in these patients.
I'm agree. I think it's an important message because when we are looking the IMPOWER-010, if we look the subpopulation either with an EGFR mutation or alt translocation, the hazard ratio is close to be one finally in terms of disease-free survival. So it does not seem to bring a benefit. Same as for the metastatic disease, the priority is probably and for sure to expose patients to EGFR TKI, and so that means with osimertinib in this situation. And so, Johan, if this patient was a smoker patient, so I imagine we probably not test all the patients for the EGFR mutation, with a PD-L1 highly positive, you might discuss in this case adjuvant immunotherapy or neoadjuvant immunotherapy. That means you would probably expose patients with a PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibitor also?
Yes, but our preference clearly would be to try to get them into a protocol where the chemoimmunotherapy is given preoperatively, because there are many advantages. In general, the chemoimmuno is better tolerated preoperatively. It's the tumor and the immune system is still intact. There's no lymph node dissection that has happened. So we would prefer strongly the preoperative route. But if he had the standard approach of surgery and chemotherapy, we would consider him for an adjuvant protocol where immunotherapy is still in ongoing research. But as you said, we have the initial data from the IMPOWER-010 study where atezolizumab gave some benefit in patients with stage 2-3A mainly who had PD-L1 expression.
For sure. And you have the same, if finally the patient was non-operable because it was N2 multi-site. So in this case, chemo, LT, and the durvalumab after?
Yes, and it could also be the case, that's what I said in the beginning, if the pulmonary function tests turned out to be very risky for resection, we would go for the Pacific regimen as well.
Mm-hmm. Johan, at that time, how do you think of the pulmonary function after radiotherapy in this case? Because low pulmonary function, so it is. I've read that pulmonary function is going down, and also performance is going down.
Yeah, the pulmonary function, it depends. For radiotherapy, it depends. If the pulmonary function is less good due to COPD, it's usually not a problem. If the pulmonary function is less good due to interstitial lung disease, then for radiotherapy, it's a very big problem.
I think it depends on the radiation field. If the radiation field is
larger. Yeah, but also on the underlying disease. Pulmonary interstitial disease is a high risk factor for radiotherapy. COPD is not.
No, no, for sure. So that's why this is important to discuss this file on MDT. And we have a lot of discussion about this type of clinical case between surgery, chemo, RT, resectable, non-resectable, and nowadays with the targeted therapy, immunotherapy. That's becoming crazy for the non-small cell lung cancer, but that's finally, that's fine, because whatever the case, we improve the overall survival, but the thing is to have a good discussion as we have done. So really, I want to thank you. It was a great pleasure, Johan and Tsuboy, to have this discussion about this file. I want to thank you again. Thank all the faculty for building this presentation, the audience for watching. And so you can find out more about MDT care for patients with early EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer in the other short videos in this activity. Thank you so much again.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget also there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.